The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Welcome. So glad you're here. So again, my name is Kyoko Katayama, and I'm one of the, I would guess I can say, senior member of this community. I've been around for a while. And so along with a whole bunch of other leaders in the community, when Mark is away, we recover for him with joy and anxiety sometimes. I'm going to talk about living courageously. Actually, I had a very short notice. They asked me last week, and I was really busy until yesterday. So I'm kind of winging it, too. So I've been thinking about courage a lot. Ever since the election, I heard more stories of fear, despair, depression, and worries. And my own bubble was burst. And I was really sobered by the bursting of my bubble, for sure. And that sobriety turned to a kind of a fierce determination to be more diligent in my spiritual practice and try to see the ways that I might have been contributing to the injustices around us. You know, I'm sure I wasn't the only one who thought that our democracy had an unshakable foundation. I took the relative, and I'm putting relative in quotes, I took the relative safety of many who look and speak differently for granted. Now, if you're a black person, a Muslim, or an undocumented immigrant, you may not feel even relative safety at all. And I took hope for the health of the planet for granted. I took many, many things for granted. On November 9th, I realized that all of these, too, are subject to impermanence and possibly radical changes. For the last 6 months, I have been living with some urgency to not slack on my practice. I have been wary of bubbles of any kind now, and wary of unconsciously creating or recreating the bubble again and shrink inside it. You know, a nice Nin said, life shrinks or expands in proportion to our courage. And I didn't want to live a shrunken life. There are more people who live in fear than 6 months ago, I think. So there are more people, significantly more, who are suffering. It may be that the fears have always been there, but they really have surfaced. Even many of my friends with great privileges talk of their fears and their depression. So we live with so much more political and economic uncertainties. And what the bubble was doing was to insulate me from some of the harsh reality. The urgency is partly to grasp what this reality is and to see my place in it with clarity and to respond with compassionate action. As we receive the goodness this center offers, this beautiful space, beautiful hearts, don't we want to align with the center's commitment based on the Buddha's teaching? The freedom that the Buddha points to involves acknowledging and responding to the suffering we see around us, as well as in us. That's one of the statements on the Common Ground website. We want to understand how the injustices arise out of our ignorance that perpetuate ideas and feelings of separation. And that feeling of separation leads to suffering. But I'm not going to talk about social justice tonight. I like to talk about courage. How each of us live courageously every day. I mean, each of us. Sometimes we don't even notice how much courage it takes to simply live. So, of course, mindfulness practice, and not just formal practice of sitting on the cushion, but practice of being alert and relaxed, clear-headed, and loving. That practice is needed more than ever, I believe. And all of that calls for courage. Maya Angelou said, courage is the most important virtue, one of the most important virtues, because without it, you can't practice any other virtues consistently. Courage has qualities of energy plus focus. And without either of these, we are just daydreaming. I've just finished teaching Befriending Death class. The whole title is Befriending Death, Meeting Impermanence with Courage, Love, and Equanimity. And I see some of the students that were in my class, and good to see you. And so this might be a good review for you. So I always start the class on courage, because I appreciate that it takes courage to come to a place to not only talk about death, but to befriend it. And by the last class, in the sixth week, the students realized that the courage to face death is no greater than courage to embrace life. This embracing, right? We can't embrace unless we get close and unless we extend our arms. So that means to be really intimate with life. It is so tempting to space out, to turn away, to create false hope when things get hard. So this statues, there are statues, actually there are statues throughout the center, and all the Buddhist statues are in mudras. So mudra is a symbolic, often hand gestures, but sometimes it's a whole body posture. So this Buddha is doing this. So people who are listening on the Dharma podcast, I'm holding up my right hand, the palm facing outward, and the left hand sitting on my lap. So this left hand is a mudra of samadhi in deep concentration. And this right hand is a mudra of no fear. And interestingly, this is Mahapajapati. She's also doing no fear. Can you all see the statue? And her left hand is a mudra of wish fulfillment and generosity. Some mudras do involve the entire body, such as the reclining Buddha. I don't know if you've seen the picture. Huge Buddha laying down on his right side. And that's a Buddha of Parinibbana. That was the posture of the Buddha as he lay dying and attained Parinibbana. This Mahapajapati was both the Buddha's maternal aunt and adoptive mother when Buddha's mother Maya died soon after his birth. And she was the first woman to request the ordination of woman at Buddha's time, and the first Buddha nun. Imagine her courage. So I usually begin my Befriending Death class pointing this to mudra of no fear. And for us, lay people, it really doesn't mean no fear, that we have no fear or we should avoid fear. It means to trust something larger than fear and to take action informed by that trust. So what is this something larger than fear then? It is told that once the Buddha instructed his monks to go live in the forest and meditate under a tree. Well, so they did that. As it turned out, that forest was inhabited by the deities, the tree deities. And they didn't like being intruded by a bunch of monks. So they decided to scare away all these monks. So at night, they created terrifying objects, dreadful noises, and sickening stenches. And so soon the monks were shaking, and they all turned pale, and their minds were just filled with fear that they couldn't meditate. So they tried really, really, really hard, but there is no way. So they realized the only recourse was to go back to the Buddha and request that they practice elsewhere. So when the Buddha heard the monks' complaints, he told them they have to go back to the same forest and practice under the same tree. And the monks shook in fear and protested. And the Buddha said, "Don't be afraid. I will teach you something to protect you." It is said that that was when the Buddha taught Metta Sutta, the loving kindness chant. And the chant expresses a wish for happiness and well-being for all beings. So, with the chant memorized, the monks went back to the forest, all the way back chanting Metta Sutta. And when the trees heard the chant, they were so moved that they vowed to protect the monks. So I think that's a kind of a one beautiful story of connecting fear and courage and love. So in Buddhism, courage is not so much something outward like running against opposing fire with valor, but something more internal and heart-centered, like love. The very word courage is derived from Latin cor, C-O-R, meaning heart. And it's also the root word for core, the center, and cordial. So what is this love that inspires courage? There are three kinds of love that inspire courage. First, there is a love of truth. That's why we're here, right? Not that a teacher knows the truth. It's that there is a place in each of us that loves to know and understand what this life is really about. To understand the self. Who am I? To really grasp what suffering is about and how to be free from it. The love of truth urges us to observe, inquire, and learn. The Buddha said, but don't blindly accept what you're told. Ehipasiko, the Buddha said. It literally means come and see for yourself. Come and see for yourself, but find out for yourself what is true. And second, there is the love of this precious life. Who doesn't want to live fully till the very end? This life is at once utterly precious and absolutely impermanent. Meditation teacher Kamala Masters said of the preciousness of this life like this. She said, as a human being, we have the greatest potential of all creatures on earth to realize the Dharma, the true nature of reality, to experience an ineffable, unconditional peace, and to discover a way of living that is in harmony with the profound truths of life. And another way to view the preciousness of this particular life each of us is living is to contemplate, you know, from Big Bang to this very moment, it is a continuous unfolding of causes and conditions through time. There's been the continuity, and yet permanence is the impermanence. So not two are exactly the same, despite the similarities, because of that. Each one of us is made up in unique configuration caused by the unfathomable conditions. So what we have to give to the world is also unique. So we have to be ourselves, even though most of the time we don't even know what that means. That's okay. I think we do know the felt sense of ease and belonging when we rest in just the way we are. And another word for that is being authentic. And third, and finally, there is the love for one another and for ourselves. And that is the essence of Metta Sutta. A phrase from the chant goes, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living being. And all living being must include ourselves. When we get in touch with our love, we find the energy and focus of courage to stop harming, whether it ourselves, others, animals, or our planet. Until we connect with our love, our actions are not sustainable. Ehipasiko. Please find out for yourself, though, if this is true, that it is love that inspires courage to open to the suffering despite our fears, despite not knowing outcome of our courageous actions. So we just talked about three kinds of love that inspire courage. Love of truth, love of life, and love of one another and self. And when we are on spiritual path, there are particular kinds of courage that are asked of us. And I owe my teacher, Matt Flickstein, for this beautiful teaching of four kinds of courage from many years ago. So the first kind is the courage to show up and be present to what is. It takes courage to accept that there's no other useful time than the one we are in right now to awaken. This is it. What do the relics from John Lennon's song say? Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans? Well, we don't want that, do we? Of course, we get to recognize plans, but plans are plans. Plans are not life being lived. It takes courage to keep on returning to this truth that there's no other useful time than now. And this is the heart of the mindfulness practice. The second is the courage to accept our humanity. Do we want perfection? And if not perfection, do we want to improve our lives to become perfect? It takes courage to let go of our perfectionism and say a vulnerable yes, a kind yes to our feelings and our limitations. Rest happens when we embrace our shadow and our failures. When we let go of being perfect, we finally come home to ourselves. Pema Chodron, an American Buddhist teacher and author of several books, beloved teacher, said, "The most fundamental aggression to ourselves, the most fundamental harm we can do to ourselves is to remain ignorant by not having the courage and the respect to look at ourselves honestly and gently." So the third kind of courage is the courage to learn to tolerate the pain and discomfort of our difficult emotions. It could be fear, it could be anxiety, it could be anger, grief, shame, regrets. As intense and real they seem, we are not our emotions. They're continuously changing and passing, just like weather. And some could really be intense like a storm. But the storm always passes. Are we willing to learn to meet each emotion without getting lost in the stories the emotions tell us? The emotions tell us who we are, but that's not who we are. It takes courage to slow down enough to meet the difficult emotion as a guest and be willing to inquire what it has to teach us. This work makes us feel vulnerable. But without walking through the door of vulnerability, we can't get to the other side, to courage. Brené Brown, a scholar and storyteller, and she's become really well known for her talk, TED Talk on vulnerability, said, "Vulnerability is not weakness, and the uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure we face every day are not optional. Our only choice is a question of engagement. Our willingness to own and engage with our vulnerability determines the depth of our courage and the clarity of our purpose. The level to which we protect ourselves from being vulnerable is a measure of our fear and disconnection." And finally, the fourth kind of courage is courage to live from the open heart. So it means to be willing to suspend judgments, expectations, comparisons, and the urges to fix others or correct their beliefs. It takes courage to instead cultivate the heart that is fearlessly open and receptive, risking vulnerability and uncertainty. And there's something to note about courage. How courage looks on the outside is different from how it feels on the inside. It's really important to notice that. David White, one of my favorite poets, describes it this way. From the inside, it can feel like confusion. Only slowly do we learn what we really care about and allow our outer life to be realigned in that gravitational pull. With maturity, that robust vulnerability comes to feel like the only necessary way forward, the only real invitation, and the surest, safest ground from which to step. On the inside, we come to know who and what and how we love, and what we can do to deepen that love. Only from outside, and only by looking back, does it look like courage. This past winter, I went snorkeling with a friend at a shallow beach in Mexico. And she went ahead of me in water very quickly. So when I finally caught up with her, she was clearing her mask that was full of water. She said, because of my nose, there isn't a mask that fits me. So I just have to keep on clearing. That's all. Then she swam away. To me, from outside, looking at her, that was courageous. You see, she was in a terrible car accident where her only daughter was killed and her face was mangled. The emergency doctors put her face back together by looking at her driver's license. So since then, her nose has never been right. She could give up, but she chose to go snorkeling every year because she loves that warm ocean and snorkeling among fish and turtles. And that was one of the many ways she was undaunted by challenges of life. So to me, she looked like courage. looking at her from outside. But I think from inside, she probably had to ongoingly overcome the inconveniences, limitations, and fear of losing control. So, a moment of courage is not necessarily a big moment. She didn't even notice it. I noticed it. Throughout the day, we encounter tiny, tiny forks in the road. Shall I stop at Dairy Queen or go home and eat a fruit? Shall I visit a sick friend or succumb to tiredness at the end of the day? Shall I turn to my child who needs attentiveness and guidance, or let her just watch TV? Shall I walk the half mile to the store, or shall I just drive? At a fork in the road, it's good to remember what is it that we really love. I care about my health. I care about my friend who is suffering and not feeling well. I love my child. I care about this planet. Connecting with our love of truth, love of life, and love of self and one another help us gather energy and focus so we can make a small, courageous step. You know, we tend to dismiss these times of small courage. I think it matters that we count them and that we recognize them as a moment of courage to awaken to our truth. I think this is the only way a momentum for larger, sustainable courage is built to address the injustices and suffering in the world. So together, breathing in, let us appreciate the courage we already have because we are here. And breathing out, let's make room for the courage yet to come in surprising ways. So, I would like to invite each one of you to take a moment to reflect, maybe today, your life today, this week, or maybe watching somebody. And think about the last time you acted with some courage, or last time you observed somebody else looking really courageous. And most likely that person wasn't even aware. It doesn't have to be big. Then I would like you to turn to a person next to you and find a partner. Now, for some people, this kind of situation is too daunting. So you don't have to do anything that I invite you to do. If you want to just sit in silence or observe, that's fine. So if you're okay, find a partner next to you or behind you and share with your partner about the last time you took some courageous action or courage that other people were doing that you noticed. And try to speak as softly as you can while still being able to listen to each other, okay? I'm just going to give you a couple minutes to introduce yourselves. Beautiful. Introduce yourself, say hello.
Sure. Hello, everybody. I'm Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hello. So I'm in a transition period where I'm looking for a new career, and I'm in a career that I'm doing well in, and that there's going to be some disappointment around me changing. But I'm reaching out to my community, and I am meeting individuals that I am just so impressed by. I mean, the amount of courage that they exhibit in the way that they own their business and the way that they carry themselves. And for me, it's hard because I don't have the courage yet to make the leap. And like, I'm on the edge and I'm like, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. And then I'm like, ooh, you know, like calm down, chill out, reanalyze. And so there's this like element of how am I going to spread my wings to go do this? But then I look at what they're doing and I'm like, it's so possible. It's so possible. And it's right there. So that's courage that I'm seeing day in and day out. So
sounds like you are approaching the edge, thinking about leaping. So that too count as a courage to walk towards the edge with willingness. Is courage too. And leaping is a whole different kind of courage.
That's a whole other ballgame. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm a 7th through 12th grade art teacher, and I see a lot of courage every day, but I think about this one student in particular who this girl, a 9th grade girl, has taken a liking to him, and he's a 9th grade boy, and she's on the spectrum, and so she's a little hard for some students to handle socially, but she has so much joy for life, and he has welcomed her to his table with his other friends at the table. And he jokes around with her every day, and it's just really beautiful to see no sort of like poking fun of this girl that oftentimes does get bullied, and how courageous he is being near his friends and to just act authentically and lovingly to this to this girl. So that's my example of courage I see almost every day in class.
Wow. Thank you.
I am also an educator. I'm new at it. I have a co-teacher, and today in class, in front of all of the students, a student asked me a question. He's like, I don't know how to do this. And that was, he didn't know how to do it, and that was brave. I feel like everyone, like the kids were like, okay, no judgment, we'll figure it out together.
Thank you. How about this side? Courage, this side. Can you pass the mic? Yeah. Over there.
Thank you. My name is Nancy. I'm thinking of the most, really most courageous person that I know in my life now. This is a friend who has had multiple sclerosis for probably 10 years. The only time that I ever really saw her down was the day when she was told she would never walk again. And all these years, she has been a life model for me with the courage that she faces every single day. and it's becoming more and more difficult. She perceives only light and dark, but smart, funny, serves on boards of directors and is giving all the time. And she has a husband who takes such extraordinary care of her, whatever she might need, and as cheerful as she. It is just, these are two life models. And I just cannot imagine how I would respond to that kind of adversity. She's truly something to watch.
Thank you.
And I don't think she'll live much longer.
Mm.
Okay, you want to hear about my other life model? Well, if nobody else wants it at the moment. I have a friend who lives in southeastern Mexico, where I used to live part of the time. This is a woman who has muscular dystrophy. And she was Swiss, born and raised, made her way to Canada, not speaking any English, became known as the Toronto Toy Lady because she thinks anybody who doesn't know how to play is not really human, and she has a wonderful collection of toys. She made her way to Mexico, to the state and city of Oaxaca, where she set up 4 toy-making workshops for kids. 2 of them for disabled children, 1 for mixed able and disabled, and the 4th one for street kids. And the street kids and the disabled kids are absolute opposites, because the street kids are schizophrenic. They're all over. And the disabled kids have to think about every move they make, many of them. My friend's point in doing this was to let them know that they are creative and valuable human beings on both ends of the behavior continuum. And she has really changed the lives of another group of them. And so this is another one of my life models. She can't move anything but her hands and arms and her tongue. And she is wonderful to listen to.
Thank you.
I feel so fortunate to have life models like this, people who do the courage thing day after day after day.
So I noticed that, I think except Michael, how easy it is to notice other people's courage and how much harder it is to notice when we are being courageous. So I want to challenge you to really think about moments of your own courage. You know, I don't know if it took courage to speak up tonight.
I was going to say, that's my piece of courage.
but we need to count that. And the other, you know, other thing to think about that we may take for granted is how much courage it takes to do this practice. It takes a lot of courage, because sometimes when we become aware of all things, and not all of them are pleasant or easy, and we become open to suffering out there and in here. And it takes courage to stay with that. So, would anyone who has a story of your own courage willing to share? Is that a hand over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've recently needed to confront my father about his alcoholism, and he kind of lashed out at me. He got really defensive, and it's just, you know, trying to, you know, say, you know, you need to go in, you need to get help, you need to get treatment. And it seems like the more we talk about it, the more he drinks, the more often he drinks now. So the last couple of weeks have been really, really hard for me. And it's just, you know, just telling him, you know, you need to get help. Even though before I even mentioned it, I knew he was going to get mad. I knew he was going to get defensive. So, you know, I don't really consider it to be courageous per se, but just, you know, knowing that, you know, it was going to be hard, but I did it anyway. So, I mean, it's still going to be hard the next couple of weeks, next couple of years, who knows? Mm-hmm. But, you know, just approaching that and, you know, trying to, you know, it almost feels like I'm talking to a brick wall a lot of the time. Yeah. But, you know, saying my piece, even if he doesn't hear it, I know that I've gotten it out of my system, and I hope he hears what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And gets help.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what I was kind of saying. Inside, you probably don't feel like I'm this really courageous person.
Yeah.
But outside, who thinks she's being courageous? Look at the hands. Okay? So please know that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any questions, comments about the talk itself? Okay. We can end early. In just a couple minutes. So, let's dedicate our merit. May our practice of awakening with courage benefit all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings find ease. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings be free from suffering. My goodness. Thank you. And I think we have announcements.
So thank you to Kyoko Katayama for your talk tonight. Welcome for everybody who's here for the first time. And I want to talk to you a little bit about how we do the financing at Common Ground, which is through the concept of dana or generosity. And when we have a guest speaker, we offer 2/3 of the evening's dana to the speaker, and 1/3 goes back to Common Ground. So there's a donation bowl outside the meditation hall, and you can also donate online as well. So just want to thank you once again. I think we have another announcement. Yep.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.